Going to the Word of God, 1 Chronicles, chapter 12. Fascinating chapter. Times, they were a-changing. It was time to go into a new era as they were in a land that they were ready to, for the sake of the Lord, conquer. And David had to do a tally, had to begin counting, and looked at all of those who would be his warriors, tribe by tribe. Each of the full tribes, the half tribes, he went down and he looked and he said, here are the ones that are ready to take it. Here are the ones that are ready to go forward. It is amazing because there are similarities today. There's definitely the similarities of a new opportunity. There's definitely the similarities of all the challenges leading into the opportunity. And there's definitely the similarity that the God who is King of Kings and Lord of Lords that saw David into this land to conquer it is the same God that is leading us today. I, ladies and gentlemen, am an obnoxious optimist about the church. And I'm talking about not only the universal church, but I'm talking about the little C church, local churches as well. It is easy these days to buy into the pessimism and say because of COVID, because of other factors that have taken place, this is a hopeless time. But quite frankly, we don't serve a hopeless God. We serve a God of all hope. We serve a God of all possibilities. We serve a God that can take us into a new era. When I return tomorrow night, presuming you will be here as well, I will be talking about this new canvas that we have, the blank slate. It will be more like a telescope looking into the months ahead. And tonight is kind of like a microscope, and to mix the metaphor, a telescope as well. We're going to look a little bit into the future, but we're going to look deeply at one particular issue. But before we do that, let's look at 1 Chronicles chapter 12. Once again, David is beginning to assemble and have counted all of the warriors. And as you begin to look at chapter 12, really beginning around verse 24, you begin to see the tally of the tribes. For example, from verse 24, far from the tribe of Judah, there were 6,800 warriors armed with shields and spears. Next verse, from the tribe of Simeon, there were 7,100 brave warriors. And so it goes on and on. These are the warriors. These are their weapons. This is how they are prepared to take the land. And then you get to a strange and different verse. Verse 32. From the tribe of Issachar, there were 200 leaders of the tribe with their relatives. All these men understood the signs of the times and knew the best course for Israel to take. Isn't it unusual, such a small number? Isn't it unusual that this particular tribe was not the tribe that had the weapons, but it was a tribe that was discerning God's work in this time? Isn't it unusual to see what the work of Issachar was, to discern the signs of the times? One thing we know beyond a shadow of a doubt, the Word of God is unchanging. One thing we know beyond a shadow of a doubt, that God is not changing. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. One thing we know beyond a shadow of a doubt, that He will see us through any and everything. But here's another thing we know. The world around us is changing. Culture is changing. Context is changing. God is asking us in the midst of all of this to discern the signs of the times. Not to do so with despair, but to do so with hope. God infuse optimism and see the possibilities that are out there. I was talking day before yesterday in a conversation that could be repeated many times in many places, including with me, to a pastor who said, I am ready to quit. It was not my role to chastise this pastor and to tell him, oh, you just need to suck it up and go. My role was to listen because he had been through hardship. He was in a difficult church. The critics were fierce. The context was struggling. There were so many reasons for him to give up. But when it was all said and done, not because I said anything particular, we ended the conversation about 2 hours later with him saying, "You know what, Tom? God's not done with me, and God's not done with my church. I think I'm ready to move forward." That is a posture of hope that God has asked us to have. Not that the situation is easy, not that the situation is going to be a path that we will go along without any struggles. God is asking us to trust Him to move forward. Here's what we'll be looking at. We'll be looking at the whole issue of church adoptions. And you say, "Rainer, what is that?" Or Tom, or whatever you want to call me. What do you mean? We're going to get to that in just a moment. Now, this is relatively new nomenclature, and I'll explain that in just a moment. But this may be one of the most exciting things that I see on the horizon for churches and denominations, and we'll begin to give you some definitions in just a moment. And I thought my phone was on, and my son just texted me, so hang on just a second. There we go. So let's begin to look at this. First of all, let's ask this question. What year is it? The year is 2025. Now, why am I saying that? It's not that I can't read a calendar. It is simply this. Time has been compressed and accelerated. All of the trends that we have been watching for years and years and years, and we projected them, were supposed to happen in 2025, but they happened 4 years sooner. Most of that was due to COVID, of course, and all of the change that got taken place there. But there are other reasons as well. And all of this time that we have been seeing change be so incredibly rapid, now it is accelerating. And is it exacerbating the problems that we have? But it also has given us new opportunities. Let me just put one of the problems out there, because this is how God is going to work in the future to overcome these. The number of churches in America that are close to closure is 15,000 each year moving forward. Now, how does that compare to the past? A typical bad year of closures was somewhere around 8,000 in North America. So in simple terms, the number of churches that are on the precipice of closing, close to closing, is double what it has been. Now, I could give you a lot of negative information. I could give you a lot of signs that these are difficult times. But the tribe of Issachar was not told to say, okay, these are the problems. They were told to say, discern the times that we can move forward. So what are we going to be looking at tonight? We're going to be looking at something that I think is incredibly exciting. It is the whole issue of church adoptions. And church adoption of churches, is a great counter movement. Now let's begin to understand some of the terms. We're going to get to this adoption in just a minute. First term, revitalization. Revitalization. Revitalization is an attempt to move a church toward greater health using internal resources. So what does that mean? That means you are using your members, you're using your funds, you're using your facility. Everything that you are doing is within the church. You're not bringing in outside help. You're not bringing in outside resources. So revitalization in general is when a church tries to turn around on its own. Here's another term that may not be as familiar. Church fostering. Church fostering is one church helping another for a defined period of time. We're going to talk about where we got that term in just a moment, but obviously you can see that there are reasons that we're using this term. Church adoption. Church adoption is a healthier church bringing a less healthy church into its family. A healthier church bringing a less healthy church into its family. So, there are many times that you have probably been involved in one church helping another. But when we begin to talk about fostering and adoption, we're talking about a lot of intentionality. The word adoption was coined by my son Sam as a metaphor for one church that is healthy bringing another church into its family. And there have been other names for it. Let's just put some of the names that are up that we have seen. Replanting, acquisition, merger. Replanting, it has too many connotations of church planting. Acquisition, merger, has too much of the corporate sound that sounds like a takeover. So let's begin to look at this in terms of the family. What does adoption mean? It means one church that is healthier is bringing in a church into its family that is less healthy. This is something that just started in significant numbers about 8 to 10 years ago, but now with COVID, it is increasing at a massive rate. And we're going to look at this, and that we'll get to that in just a moment. That'll be the first trend that we're looking at. Let me give you an example. I was speaking to my son, Sam. He's my eldest son. I have 3 sons, 1 wife, 11 grandkids, 1 grand dog, 1 grand cat. Sam did not like the terminology that he was hearing for bringing another church into the family. It sounded like a takeover. It sounded like something that was hostile. And Sam said, "Dad, think about what has happened to my family," talking about his family. He said, "We brought Dominic into our home because his mother was in prostitution and also a meth addict. We brought him into our home to foster with the hope that she could get her act together and she would be reunified with her biological son. 1-2 years passed and she still was not getting any better. And so when it was all said and done, she gave up parental rights. She said, 'I cannot parent a child.' And so Sam and Aaron, husband and wife, in addition to their 3 biological children, willingly adopted Dominic. And now Dominic is another one of my grandchildren." What just happened there? They began by fostering. They didn't say, "We want to adopt this child and to take it from his biological mother." They just wanted to help him in any way they could with the hope that there would be reunification. When a church fosters another church, they don't go into this, if they're doing this the right way, they do not go into this with the attitude, "Oh, this is a good way to acquire a church." They go in to help a church. And so when it's all said and done, they start helping a church. We're going to get into some of the principles of helping a church and fostering. But what happens at the end of fostering? Most of the time, fostering has a designated period, typically a year or less, because you do not want to create a sense of dependency. And so when you foster a church, when you help another church, what you are doing is you're saying, "We're going to help you for a certain period of time." My son Sam took that principle and actually did so at his church in Bradenton, Florida. His church was a church that was helping another church about 5 miles away. The church called Southside, his church called West Bradenton, his church was stronger, healthier, obviously not perfect health, so there's no such thing as that. And Southside was on the precipice of closing. The pastor had resigned. There was no pastor. And 2 of the members, they only had attendance of about 6 or 7. 2 of the members came to 2 of the members at Sam's church because of relationships that were there. And they said, "Can you help us?" Sam and the leadership of the church said, "Absolutely." They supplied a preacher to give them time to find a preacher, a pastor. They supplied a music leader. They brought in someone in children's ministry because the neighborhood that this church had not reached was filled with children. And they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to actually put in writing an agreement that we will assist you in these ways as you grow into it. And then at the time of 1 year, we will probably pull out, unless we evaluate that there should be another month, 2 or 3 months. But most likely at the end of 1 year, we're going to step back. So the church began to do so. Southside now had a worship leader. Southside now had someone in the pulpit. Southside now had someone in children's ministry reaching the neighborhood. And by the way, all of these were lay leaders from Sam's church. Not staff persons, but lay leaders from Sam's church. One of them was a retired pastor that was happy to come back and provide pulpit supply for this church, but all of them were lay leaders within the church. So what happened to the church? They had modest growth. And as the year began to wind down, the same people who had called the members at Sam's church, they said, we really just want to be a part of your church. And so after a series of meetings, prayer, and moving forward, West Bradenton Church in Bradenton, Florida, adopted Southside Church in Bradenton, Florida, about 5 miles apart. Now the church that was struggling has 2 worship services, one in English, one in Spanish, and it's averaging about 80 in attendance. And it's a thriving campus of West Bradenton. So now West Bradenton is 1 church and 2 locations because they have adopted Southside into their family. In fact, the name of Southside, they took upon the name of Sam's Church, and it's called West Bradenton Church, Southside Campus. I hope that gives you kind of a picture of what can happen. It started with fostering. It ended with adoption. But we've seen a number of churches foster where it does not end in adoption because one church becomes healthy as the other church helps it. So I hope you get the picture for just a moment. Now let's look at some of these trends. Let's look at some of the trends in adoption. First of all, this is becoming more and more common. There is an increased number of churches that are being adopted, or you can put it the other way, there are an increased number of churches that are adopting. I know of one church that is averaging 100 in attendance, which would make it, the median attendance of churches in America is 65 now, so it'd be on the larger side, 100 in attendance, and it has adopted 4 churches. It has adopted 4 other churches. One of the campuses, now it was a church, now a campus, is actually larger than the original church itself. So there's an increased number. This used to be the purview of large churches, maybe mega churches or at least large churches, usually 500 and up, 700 and up. Now we're seeing an increased number of churches that are adopting and being adopted. This is something that is increasingly common, and hear me well, we see this as one of the major trends on how churches are going to get healthier, both the adopted church and the adopting church. Increased number. Trend number 2, I've already referred to this, I got ahead of myself. This is no longer the domain of larger churches. Smaller churches, which are healthier, and again, to be clear, healthier does not mean in perfect health. It's a relative term. Smaller churches that are healthier are adopting other churches as well. Trend number 3. This is one of the factors feeding the increase in horizontal growth. Now, if you think I'm speaking weird terms, allow me to explain them for just a moment. Most of the time, when we think of numerical growth in a church, we are thinking of what is typically called vertical growth. What is vertical growth? Vertical growth is when your attendance is growing in the Sunday morning slot. Whether you have 1, 2, or 3 services on Sunday morning, it is growing in the Sunday morning slot. Horizontal growth goes beyond Sunday morning. Horizontal growth means that it's a time other than Sunday morning, or it's a different location other than that one location on Sunday morning. It could be another Sunday morning, but it is a different location. So, horizontal growth is the fastest growing way of growth, redundant. It's the fastest growing approach to growth in America today. So what does that mean? If I were to ask you what day of the week is the fastest growing day for worship services, some of you may know, but some of you may be surprised. That day is Thursday night. Now you say, why is that? Well, first of all, I got to make sure that you're okay with that theologically, doctrinally, and polity-wise. And you can deal with that whichever way you want to. So, you know, that would be the first question. But then the next question is, why? Why, Tom? Why is Thursday night growing so fast? Well, think about it for just a moment. You're in the metro Nashville area. South, you got Franklin. Other side, you got Gallatin and Hendersonville. Right in the middle, you've got Nashville, this big metropolitan area extending as far south as Spring Hill, Columbia, as far north, even beyond Hendersonville. And you look at all of those places, and you add them all up, and you ask this question: where are people on Sunday morning? In the Nashville area, 31% of working adults are working on Sunday morning. Let me say that one more time. 31% of working adults are working on Sunday morning. What does that mean? That means if Sunday morning for churches is the only option, they obviously will not come at all. We're missing about one-third of the potential population because we have Sunday morning only. Again, I could be stepping in areas I don't need to, but that is one example. How about the example of Sam's church? His church, West Bradenton, adopted another church. The moment they did that, they had horizontal growth because they were no longer depending upon Sunday morning at one site for their growth. So whether it's going to another site, going to another time or day, the reality of it is horizontal growth is the largest, most significant growth that we are seeing in America today. And we used to look at Sunday morning as the primary growth mechanism. Trend number four, decreasing resistance to adoption. For many people, it's not something that you would think of because of Hezekiah 3:16. We've never done it that way before. And I get it, because this type of approach to church life is not something that we are used to. I did a conference via Zoom this morning in Uganda, and I was talking to someone in Kampala. They were doing the Q&A, and it was kind of funny. I thought maybe I was back in Nashville. The pastor said, "I like this idea of horizontal growth, but I have people who are resistant to it in my church." And I'm thinking, it doesn't matter if you're in Kampala or if you're in Hendersonville or anywhere else in the United States, you're still going to have that issue. Adoption is becoming more receptive, something that churches and leaders are more willing to do. So trend number four, again and again, we're seeing less resistance to adoption. Trend number five. I will talk about this a little bit more tomorrow. It complements the neighborhood church movement. What is the neighborhood church movement? The neighborhood church movement is where a church is located in a specific place. Many times the church has the same name as that specific place, and it is intentionally and laser focused on reaching those residents around them. The neighborhood church used to be the fastest growing source of growth in America, particularly in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And so many churches that would grow up, it might be called Golden Springs Free Will Baptist Church, because Golden Springs was the neighborhood. Something happened, and the neighborhood church stopped reaching the neighborhood. And when it stopped reaching the neighborhood, it really was no longer a neighborhood church. Now, why was that? It was because the neighbors did not look like the people that were in the church. And as that took place, there was resistance to reaching the neighborhood, and the church became more of an island with a moat around it than a bridge to welcome the community in. We're seeing a resurgence of the neighborhood church. And as we begin to see a resurgence of it, one of the reasons is many neighborhood churches are becoming adopted. And when they do so, they're becoming laser focused on reaching their neighborhood. Of course, you don't have to be adopted to become a dynamic neighborhood church. It can happen through revitalization, which is using your own resources, your own people. But one of the reasons that this movement is growing so fast is because the neighborhood church movement is complementing it as well. Okay, that's a little bit on adoption. Now, follow me on this, and let's go back to fostering for just a moment. Sometimes I call fostering the first cousin to adoption. Fostering will likely become the major source of adoption. Now, I gave this earlier, this example. A church begins to help another church. What is that called? Tell me. Church helping another church. Fostering. The goal is to get the foster church healthy so it no longer needs assistance. The goal of fostering most of the time in families is to get the child reunified with his or her family. Get the family back together again. However, as in the case with my son and Dominic, that does not always happen. And therefore, they adopted Dominic. Fostering is going to probably be the largest source of adoption. Now, one of the common questions that can be asked in all of this is, how does this happen? And we're going to give some more details. You may even have some questions about it. But, Tom, you've given me a lot of theory. In fact, I can say readily, I was talking to my middle son, Art, who lives in North Carolina, and I was explaining something to him. And after about 5 minutes, he interrupted me and he said, "Dad, I really don't want to know that much about it." And by the way, I saw a Facebook post by Art. He had a parenting question, and I was trying to figure out how I would respond to it. How would you respond to it? This is really off trail for just a moment, and I'll come back to bore you with some of the details on this. But he has three sons, like I have three sons. And he says, what would you do if your child, his children are 11 and under, his three sons, what would you do if your child was intentionally disobeying you by staying up well past his bedtime because he's reading his Bible extra? That was his Facebook post. It's fascinating to see. One of the things I responded to him, I said, well, he's definitely not like his daddy. And then another thing I said was, send him to me for a month. And then he responded to me, well, what will that do? Means he won't read the Bible as much because he is with you, or he'll become obedient. Well, that's totally different. I don't know why I got off on that particular thing. Ultimately, adoption is mostly about relationships. Now, we'll get into this and we'll dig a little bit deeper. You may even have some questions like, what do you mean about relationships? Many times someone says, well, how do I go about adopting a church? How do I go about being adopted? Almost unequivocally, with few exceptions, adoption takes place when people get to know each other. Now, think about it for a moment. Pastors, church leaders, church members. Have you thought about intentionally getting to know leaders and members of another church just for the sole purpose of seeing how you can serve them? Have you ever thought about going and getting coffee with a, then this would be pastor to pastor, though it's not limited to that, and saying, I just want to get to know you and your church a little bit better. And maybe at the end of a coffee or two or three or four or a meal, you'll finally be able to say, you know, is there anything our church can do for your church? I know one church that takes an entire quarter to pray for another church in the community. They pray for four churches a year. 13 of those weeks, they're praying for one church. And the pastor and others in the church are constantly saying, how can we pray for you? How can we pray for you? This whole relationship of adoption means caring one to another. And so adoption is mostly about relationship. So what do we say here? How do we get started? Getting started in adoption, be a source of encouragement or help. Don't go into adoption thinking, we're going to grow our church by getting another site. Go into fostering our adoption with this attitude. We want to serve. We want to encourage. We want to help. And as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, prayer is the most important activity. When you start praying for another church, one of the things I love that we do at Church Answers, we feature a church every week, 52 weeks out of the year, that we feature churches around the world, predominantly in North America, around the world, and we just call it Pray For. And we say, this is what you need to know about this church. They submit information about their church, and we literally have tens of thousands of people on Sunday praying for a particular church. Prayer is the most important activity. Okay, I'm going to jump ahead for just a moment and just say, okay, you got a church that's interested in adoption. Where do we go from here? Well, too much information for me to try to get into all of it, but communication is key to both churches. Make sure you both understand what is about to happen, what will happen. There's so much information that we can share here. Adoption usually is a process. It can take as long as a year, even once you begin the starting point. Also, adoption means that one church is dissolving and another church is acquiring them. So that means legally you have to do everything in your area according to legal standards of the area. Usually, there's a period of closure after a church is adopted. It's kind of a reset. Sometimes the name is changed. Sometimes it reflects the church that has adopted. And then you reopen. And you reopen either with a new name or maybe the existing name and a campus of the church that adopted them. And then there's a great celebration because one church is now not going to close because another church has adopted it, and in most cases, saved it from closing its door. You celebrate. There's a time of great celebration because a new member has come into the family. A new member has become a part of our church. And then at some point, you recalibrate. You just go back and say, how are we doing? How are the two sites now, not two churches, how are they existing? Now, here's what I know. I know, first of all, I have given you a lot of information that is very broad about a very big trend. I understand that this is really just skimming the surface to give you some of the main points here. But hear me well, ladies and gentlemen. Adoption, fostering are happening at a rapid pace. And if it's something that is just hard to wrap your mind around, give it time, give it prayer, and see if it's a possibility for you and your church. There are 16,000 churches that are on the precipice of closing or more in North America alone. We need more and more churches to be willing to come in and help, and more churches willing to take other churches into their family. I think that this is one of the reasons why the future is bright and the hope is there. Issachar listened, and they had wisdom to know the signs of the times, and they acted accordingly. Ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the things that we will see in future church. And I pray that as this begins to take place in an accelerated pace in 2022, you will prayerfully consider this as a part of the life of your church.